Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Lessons with Leaders, a special edition of Lehigh Valley Discourse. I am your host, Lori Siebert. Our producer tonight is Neil Heaver. Our guest this evening is Don Cunningham. Don has been president and CEO of the Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation since July 2012. Prior to leading the region's economic development organization, Cunningham served in a variety of key public and private positions for more than two decades. He was twice elected mayor of Bethlehem, twice elected Lehigh County executive, and appointed Pennsylvania Secretary of the Department of General Services in Governor Ed Rendell's administration. He also served as president of the Pennsylvania League of Cities and as a member of Bethlehem City Council. Prior to his public sector career, Cunningham worked for the Fortune 500 company PPL in Allentown and served in the Moravian College administration in Bethlehem. Cunningham has played a key role in the economic renaissance of the Lehigh Valley, which includes the principal cities of Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton, and part of the transformation of the region's economy from heavy industry to a diversified economic base with an annual GDP exceeding $40 billion. He's been responsible for managing budgets ranging from $50 million to $4 billion and has overseen economic development and/or urban growth initiatives, resulting in billions in new investments and the creation of tens of thousands of jobs. Cunningham earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in journalism with a minor in government in 1987 from Shippensburg University and a Master's of Arts in political science from Villanova University in 1991, where he graduated summa cum laude. He was born and raised in Bethlehem, where his family has lived for five generations. Welcome, Don. Wow.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you very much.
There's a
Clearly sounds like I can't keep a job by reading that bio.
No, it's constant improvement. That's what everyone should look toward and why we look to leaders like you to learn more about what you do in your work.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for joining us. Your accomplishments really are too many to list in your bio, but I hope that we can learn some lessons from you tonight that make you the person that you are and have been able to accomplish so much. So let's start at the very beginning. Your family has been in the Lehigh Valley for five generations. I'm sure that's something you're very proud of. So tell me a little bit about your family. How many children were in your family? And where were you in the lineup? I'm always curious about that.
You're going to psychoanalyze me, right? Well, and even more specifically, my family's really Bethlehem-based. Both of my sets of great-grandparents came to Bethlehem from elsewhere, one side from Ireland, one side from Slovenia, because of the mills, because of the opportunity for work here, like so many immigrant families that came. And really set up shop on the south side of Bethlehem and then migrated over on my dad's side, on the Cunningham side, to West Bethlehem. And my kids were actually the fifth generation of my family line that lived on the same block, that grew up on the same block of 7th Avenue in West Bethlehem. So my dad's family is larger, six in his family. My mom and dad had only two kids, my sister and I. So I'm the oldest, but my parents were teenagers when I was born. They, you know, different generation and came out of Liberty High School. My dad went to work at the steel company as a laborer, and I was born within a year of them being out of high school. So I grew up in a very traditional, what you would call classic blue collar working class existence in Bethlehem. With family very close. My great-grandmother lived across the street. My grandparents were a block up. There were actually about six to seven Cunningham families in about a four-block radius in West Bethlehem.
Well, you can't get away with too much then, can you?
No. Many cousins, many aunts, many uncles, which was great. You know, I could walk to elementary school at that time in the beginning of my childhood at Calypso and stop at my great-grandmother's to get something to eat, my grandmother's to get something to eat. And it was, I didn't really realize how unique of an experience it was until after it was gone and until I got out of Bethlehem and saw, well, you all didn't grow up with, you know, your grandmother across the street and, you know, your aunt around the corner. And so it was, but when I look back on it, it was pretty idyllic.
Yeah.
It was a nice way, it was a simple, nice kind of family way to be raised.
Well, it certainly speaks to, in my opinion, your career and how it has taken off and how it came back here as well.
Yeah.
Those roots were really strong. So we're going to learn more about that probably.
And the roots were always really important to me. I mean, the community, family, and, you know, we can get into it, but my grandfather particularly was a student of the history of Bethlehem and the Lehigh Valley and had a great appreciation and love for it, which I think seeped into my conscience and became a big part of my career.
Yeah. And also, even with your parents, you said it was a blue-collar upbringing, but lots of hard work in that as well.
I was the first in my lineage of, you know, I'm the fourth generation here in the U.S. from the families and the first generation that went to college. So those first three generations, including my parents, were, you know, all very working class. None of my grandparents, I think, made it past about the 9th or 10th grade because they got sent off to go to work in those years during the Depression. And then my parents, you know, high school and out. And my sister and I both went to college.
That's good. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And you were the oldest, which sometimes goes to that leadership that we see. Now, you did go to college. You graduated with a degree in journalism from Shippensburg, a public state school. And you got your master's in political science from Villanova. After college, you worked for the Philadelphia Inquirer and the Globe Times. And I'm curious and wondering how that experience contributed to the person you are today. When I think about you working for a newspaper, were you a reporter digging for the truth? What was that experience? And
So the storyline on that, I did start my career as a writer, as a reporter. And I really believe the fundamental skills I learned in communication, how to take an issue or a topic or a subject and analyze it and then communicate it very clearly, simply, and concisely, served me extremely well later when I ended up in elected office positions and, you know, when we were faced with major issues and you had to communicate to a public a plan and make it simple and understandable and clear. But I really did not begin my career in any way thinking about elected office or serving in government. I was, as I mentioned earlier, first in my family to go to college. And my father started saying to me when I was in the junior high school, like, I want you to go to college. I don't want you to do what I do in the mills. And, you know, at that time, nobody thought Bethlehem Steel wouldn't be here and jobs wouldn't be available. So my dad was really ahead of the curve. He wasn't looking at it economically, saying, well, these steel jobs may not be here, so you need to go to college. He truly wanted me to break the chain and do something different. And honestly, I didn't really want to. I mean, I was like, well, why would I? I mean, I grew up, my grandfather was an electrical union tradesman. My father was a steel worker. My great-grandfather was steel workers, machinists. And about junior year in high school, my dad said, remember, you got to go to college. And none of us knew the process. My mom had died when we were young, and my dad was just raising us. And so it's all right, I got to go to college. So I kind of figured out how to pick LaSalle College in Philadelphia and filled out my application, got accepted. And I said, okay, I'm going to go to LaSalle College. And then my senior year, kind of late in the cycle, my dad, I guess, got the paperwork back from LaSalle with the cost of tuition. And he came to me one day and he said, you can't go here. He said, but there is a place you can go. You know, I was talking to a guy in the mill, and his son went to this place called Shippensburg, and I know how much that costs. Go there. I'm like, well, Dad, it's not that easy. It's not that quick. You know, you got to. So I scrambled and applied to Shippensburg, and this was like the end of my senior year. Fortunately, I got in and never saw the place and just showed up on the first, you know, freshman orientation weekend. And went to Shippensburg because my dad said that's where I was going to go. And my sister had even less choice because he just told her, you're going to go to Shippensburg because your brother's already there. And, you know, so you go there. So, but what I did discover when I was in high school was I really loved to write. I loved to research. I loved to write. I was a reporter on the high school paper covering anything. I had my own, like, album review column. I covered soccer games and all these different things. And took a journalism course and a creative writing class and really liked it. So went as a journalism major with a minor in government and really wanted to be the next Woodward or Bernstein. This is, like, you know, early 80s, maybe a decade after – and less than a decade after Watergate. And
so that's how that tied in.
You know, and I really wanted to write. I was interested in the machinations of government, but only from the perspective of understanding it and covering it, not being a participant in it. And I started my career, as you mentioned, in the Philadelphia suburbs. I worked for a chain of weekly newspapers covering government and writing features, and then found my way over to the suburban bureau of the Philadelphia Inquirer. Worked there while I was at Villanova. I was going to school part-time and working at the Inquirer. And I got my master's degree in political science because I thought it would give me a leg up to get a better reporting position. If I understood more about politics, I could cover politics. So it was still from the perspective of covering it and looking at it. And then I came back home, you know, a buddy of mine who called me and said, hey, the Globe Times, this is a paper that's not here anymore. It was the old Bethlehem Globe Times right here in South Bethlehem, was looking for reporters. And I said, man, that would be great to go back home. I'd gotten married young and we had our, I got 22 when I got married, first was born at 24. I took a reporting job back here in Bethlehem at the Globe Times. And I ended up covering the steel industry and Bethlehem city government and got a front row seat to the economics, the politics, the kind of generational cultural reality of what was transpiring in my own city, which then ends up leading to the politics a little later.
So interesting. And interesting, the influence really of your grandfather as well, because you said about the history, which also speaks to your interest in researching and finding out kind of the depth of your subject or whatever.
Yeah, my grandfather has a, I would call it a booklet. He always called it a book. It was always his dream to do a book. And he has a book on the history of the bridges of Bethlehem, very specific topic. But he was so proud of it. He got it done right before he died in 95. He got the booklet out and published. It's over in the library in the Bethlehem room.
Neat.
And I helped him kind of edit it, assemble it a bit. So he was a role model, and his influence on researching, understanding history, understanding where you came from, and being proud of it and writing about it left its mark on me.
That's interesting. Yeah. And your father, is he still alive today?
My dad is alive. My dad is down in Florida. He retired and with my stepmom moved to Florida a few years back, but he still comes home a lot. He was a steel worker that for 32 years lost his position in 95 when the hot end went down because he worked on the hot metal side, and then ended up working as a deputy sheriff in the county and ended up working for Judge Jack Pinella. He's moved. He's relocated to Florida.
When did your mom pass, if I can ask?
My mom died in 1980. I had just turned 14. She was only 33 years old. I was 14. I had just turned 14. My sister was 12. She was very ill and had you know health problems the last 3 years and brain tumor and she was gone at a young age. So my dad was left with a lot to handle. And, you know, that, I think, when I look back, I mean, my mom dying had a profound effect on how I viewed life, and I didn't realize it at the time, but how precious and how nothing's guaranteed and the clock's always ticking. And it probably gave me an urgency in my life to not wait and to try to do things every day because, you know, I realized that as much as everybody tells you everything's always going to be okay, that sometimes it's not. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can't dwell on it. You just have to use it as a catalyst.
A hard lesson, but a very valuable one.
Yeah.
So you probably also then took more of a a leadership role in the family as well. If your father was working, you're now 14, your sister's 12, you probably had to still watch out for things at the home front.
Yeah, because my dad would leave for the mill at like 3 in the morning. He had this, the steel had strange shifts. I mean, I think you would start in the plant at like, someone got leave 4 in the morning hour, but he'd be home at 2 o'clock. So, you know, my job was kind of to make sure my sister and I were up. We got breakfast. We got to the bus. You know, later on when I was 2 years older than her, so I had a car drive us to school. But it was, you know, kind of my responsibility to and my sister was very responsible, but it was on me to make sure everything happened.
So you went from the newspaper, which brought you from Philly back home to Bethlehem, started getting involved covering government and Bethlehem Steel stories. You're 31 years old. You're elected mayor of Bethlehem. You were touting fresh ideas, new programs, and way to revitalize Bethlehem's finances. You were the youngest elected mayor in Bethlehem's history. First, what were you thinking? And when we come back from our break, we're going to talk about you reflecting on some of the challenges you had. But let's first address, what were you thinking? How did you evolve from newspaper writer to reporter to thinking about
there's a little bit of time in between that was before I ran for mayor at 31. I transitioned out of newspapers. I took a position as I went out of the Globe Times, which had become the Express Times because the Globe went under and the Easton paper, which was called the Easton Express, bought the Globe Times, which is where you get Express Times. But I transitioned out to become the media and marketing director at Moravian College. And then I was recruited by a former Morning Call reporter who had gone to PPL in the corporate communications office to leave Moravian and go into the corporate office of PPL. So it was that time, you know, working in administration at Moravian and then working at a Fortune 500 at PPL and getting to learn more about the business world, the administrative world, how it works. That also separated me from journalism, which allowed me in 95 to run for the city council, which is part-time in Bethlehem. So I actually at 28 ran for city council and got elected. So, and the main reason I ran for city council at the time was because I had this front row seat to Bethlehem government and the economy, and I felt like as a young guy at that time, 25 or whatever, that we didn't see what was coming. That the leadership didn't see that Bethlehem was rapidly in decline, the steel was going to go away, and we had to change or we were going to die. So what drove me into it was, they say all politics is local, it was just my interest in the city. And I had had two kids by that time, and there was no voice of my generation of, well, what's next for me and my kids? Because this Bethlehem we've known for 100 years is going to be gone real soon. And the leadership, to me, at least in my own youthful arrogance, did not see that coming. So that's how I emerged politically.
Wow. Yeah. Folks, we are talking with Don Cunningham, and this is Lessons with Leaders. We'll be back in just a moment.
Not only is becoming a WDIY member a great way to support the programs you love, it has its benefits. WDIY members have access to our weekly member ticket giveaway emails. Discover great concerts, theater performances, film screenings, and more, all while supporting the many choices and real voices on WDIY. Make your gift today at 610-694-8100, extension 7, or wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to Lessons with Leaders. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and my guest this evening is Don Cunningham, and we are reflecting on lessons with leaders. Don has shared with us some of his history, education, career-wise, and moving forward from seeing a need at a young age, 25, in Bethlehem, seeing what was happening, and you thought you need to get involved. So you got on city council at a young age saying, Bethlehem's imploding, what are we going to do? And you came with ideas. And then that position evolved eventually into running for mayor at a very young age.
Yeah. And when I look back on it, you know, I really had no business at that young of ages to have the audacity to ask people to let me lead the city. But I'm glad I did. But sometimes when I reflect back from at the age of 53, I say, man, I was very bold to be able to think I could do that. But it was driven by, you know, if you dial back in your mind to the mid-90s, you know, not only was Bethlehem facing this potentially kind of cataclysmic change with the decline of steel, but it was an economic change period in America. The 90s were, we were losing our man. That was the beginning of the really significant losing of the manufacturing base, right? Mm-hmm. So in the Valley, you know, we had so many ancillary manufacturing industries spring up around immigration and around steel. You know, all the textile mills, right. All the ladies who worked in garment factories, all the garment industry was moving to Asia. And as you started to see globalization and companies chasing lower wages and lower costs. And so it was this period of, you remember, you know, Clinton got elected in 92 on a whole message of the economy, defeating George Bush Sr. after one term, which was unusual to defeat a sitting president. But it was this period of economic change that was, you know, we were kind of at the ground zero of it in Bethlehem and the Lehigh Valley. And my fear was that we were going to bottom out. We were going to become this rust belt. And there was a lot of movement in the city to talk about just tourism and festivals, which were great, but to me, it was not going to drive the economy for my generation, which graduated in the 80s. Most of the kids I graduated with left in the early 80s as the steel jobs started to go away. Because although steel didn't really close until 98, after about 83 or 84, you started seeing the waves of job reductions. So it didn't take brilliance to see that, you know, we were going through this huge change, but as so often happens in local governments, you know, there was an institutionalization that literally, and I'm not making this up, that the average term was 20 or 30 years of people who'd been on the city council. They'd been there since, you know, at this point, the late 60s or the 70s. And I looked at it as these folks weren't really equipped to kind of do the things to, they were well-intentioned folks, great community people, but maybe not equipped for the change that was upon us. So that was my message and counsel. I walked around and knocked on doors. I'd never had anybody in politics in my life, got elected, and then got on council and quickly saw that in a strong mayor form of government, you know, you're one of seven votes. And I was a bit of a pariah because I was young and I was espousing new ideas, not by party. We were all Democrats. I think there might have been one or two Republicans. But by generation and by politics, I was on the outside looking in. So I boldly thought, well, if I'm ever going to really be able to drive these ideas, I need to be mayor. I was working at PPL at the time. I got approval from, you know, I did a lot of work for the executives at PPL because I was a speechwriter for the CEO, Bill Hecht. And they said, yeah, you can run for mayor as long as you do it on your own time. You do your job during the day. Go do that stuff at night. We encourage it. They probably thought it was funny that I was running and didn't think I'd get elected. And then I got elected. And the people were ready for the new mess because it was a period of uncertainty. You know, the downtown was, it still had beautiful buildings, but it closed at 5 o'clock. There's, you know, the old Orr's department store was vacant. There's still a gravel lot at Broad and Main. The old pedestrian mall was on Broad Street. The Hotel Bethlehem was a step away from being shuttered, which ended up happening right after I got elected. So there was, you know, it wasn't the Bethlehem downtown you think of and see today. And the South Side was nothing. I mean, there was basically nothing on 3rd and 4th Street. I mean, it was pretty much hollowed out in terms of a business, any commercial or business district. You had Lehigh on the hill and the steel kind of limping along, down along the river. And in between, we actually had trouble spots. You know, we had a lot of issues with crime and drugs and things that needed to be addressed to turn things around.
So how did you balance, I'm imagining here, the feeling at that age of going, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into? Am I going to be able to do this? And oh my gosh, I don't have time to think about that. There's so much to do.
Yes, yeah, a good point. I mean, the thing that made it work for me was myself, and I had some other, not necessarily young people, it wasn't all just a youth movement, but people who were of a new mindset, who were not political, who were involved with me, and we sat down and we wrote a plan. And it was literally, my campaign was based around, because I was a writer, and we went through a lot of idea creation, and we broke it into, here's what we want to do on basic services, here's what we want to do on economic development, here's what we want to do on fiscal responsibility, and we put it all on paper. And this was before internet, or, you know, you couldn't have a website, you had to actually print it and give it out. And I think it probably ran about 25 pages. And it wasn't a political document. It was actually a governing document. You know, one could dispute the merits of the ideas, right, in the democratic process, but we had a plan. And what was amazing was when I got elected, we just worked the plan. And so it wasn't as intimidating as it otherwise would have been. And what's funny is about a year or so ago, there was the chamber's doing a history book on the latest 100 years in Bethlehem, and they asked for some documents from me. And I uncovered the plan, and about 90% of it has come to fruition. So we got it right, and we had a plan, and that's what the people voted for. We worked the plan and put a whole movement in motion. But the beauty about Bethlehem is everything happens because there's multiple communities that can buy into it. I always say that the best a leader can do is be kind of like an orchestra conductor. You've got a sheet of music, mm-hmm. you got a section for percussion, there's a section for brass, for the strings. Everybody plays a different part, but they're all playing the same sheet of music. And in Bethlehem, which was fortunate, was the vision we were talking about and the plan we were putting forward, people could buy into and implement. And, you know, the higher ed community, the neighborhood groups, the government, we're all kind of rowing the same way. And we took advantage of the natural assets we have, which is what you need to do. You have to identify what those assets are. You can't develop around somebody else's assets. It doesn't matter if, you know, if Palo Alto is doing Silicon Valley or if Raleigh-Durham is doing Research Triangle Park. You can't take that model and put it in place somewhere else. You have to look at your own assets and develop a plan around that. And we were able to do that, get buy-in, and then everybody played their parts. And 20-plus years later, it exceeds anything we thought right. could have happened in the mid-90s.
Right. Well, I suspect, too, what you were seeing, what your father was seeing in encouraging you to go to college, and what you were seeing at 25 when you decided to become part of city council, going back to the neighborhoods and the families and the generations, it might have not just been your family and your generations. Yeah. We saw a lot of that in the Steel where there were generations. So when they realized that's going away, you had to have buy-in. You almost yeah. had to have buy-in if you wanted to stay here and
yeah.
continue.
And they were looking, you know, and probably the single biggest thing I did in that time period was to tell people over and over again, we had a great past. We have a rich, wonderful legacy. It's what put most of us here because Steel was here, but it's over. We got to move on. We got to, you know, you have that short period of mourning, and we got to get to work now. And gave people hope that there was a next chapter, right? And, you know, in the beginning, we were announcing, you know, if a Perkins or a CVS came in, we were heralding it as people reinvesting in Bethlehem. And they were just little things, but you had to create a hope and an excitement and a momentum that, you know, there is a tomorrow. And then it just, it all clicked and, you know, it's kind of blew the roof
off. Well, people really don't like change, but it's good to know that
if they have to be forced.
You envisioned it, you saw it, you have a plan, you get through it, and it's a success story. From being mayor, you went on to join the Rendell administration as Secretary of the Department of General Services, and you saved the state millions of dollars in cost cutting. But you were lured back to the Lehigh Valley. So you went from mayor on to bigger things in Harrisburg, but then you came back again. You were courted to seek election as Lehigh County executive in 2005. You ran, you won, and became the first elected Democrat to the executive post. And you did it for a pay cut on your bio, Boy, this is a man who's committed. So what was the real lure back? Was it, again, back to that family you know, the family.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I never really wanted to leave. The two executive government positions that I've had are the only two in the Lehigh Valley that have two-term limits. So in Bethlehem, once you're elected a second time, which I was elected with no opposition in 2001 after that first term as mayor, I could not run again. And I had struck up a friendship with Ed Rendell. He was mayor of Philadelphia. The last 2 years, his last 2 years were my first 2 years as mayor in Bethlehem. And, you know, I was big on lessons. Don't reinvent the wheel, you know, best practices, lessons learned. If you could steal ideas, Philly had been through some really difficult financial changes in the early 90s, and Rendell had done some things to get the fiscal house in order. We needed to do that, too, because we lost 25% of our taxable land went away overnight in 98 when Steele closed. So we had to figure out how to kind of work to build the economy of tomorrow while suffering through the loss of today. So we had to really – I had to become an expert in belt tightening, you know, doing more with less, really a whole fiscal responsibility agenda, which got me early on and upside down with some of the Democratic left who I was like, look, I got to govern. I got to run this thing. You know, I can't just do it based on idealism. We got to make the budgets balance and, you know, so forth. So,
it was not in the journalism curriculum in college.
Correct. But that was more like, you know, I attribute that to two things. One, my 5 years in the corporate setting at PPL. Right. And secondly, when you grow up in a blue-collar family, particularly I did with a single dad, you learn the value of a dollar because you learn how to make a dollar stretch, right? And it always irritates me that that's a partisan tag has been put on that because you can, if you grow up poor, or not, I wasn't poor, I was middle class. But if you grow up where you don't have a lot of excess money, you learn how to manage money, right? Right. So those were skills I had to take at the time. So anyway, I got to be friendly with Rendell, learned some things from him. And then he came to me and said, look, I need you to come in the administration. We've got, at that time, the state had a $1.5 billion deficit. I want you to work on these general operations, find some savings. And by the way, you can't run again. So what are you going to do? You know, you're a 30-some-year-old guy. You got three kids now. You need a job. So I went there, did 3 years, and it was tremendous. I traveled the state, learned a lot. Ed was a great boss, but it wasn't home. You know, I was on the road every week. I was away from my kids. I was away from the family. I was missing Little League games and basketball games and all the stuff that was really important to me. So I remember it was a hard conversation going to him in 05 and saying, you know, you gave me this wonderful opportunity, you had a great job, much better pay, but I got to go back home. And by the way, there's, you know, a county executive race coming up that the Democrats have never run Lehigh County. So I went back and ran and won there in 05, won again in 09, and again hit the two-term limit mark where, okay, what's next? You know, that when I got a little closer to almost finishing the term, when some of the folks from the LVDC board said, hey, you really ought to think about this. Most of your career's been around economic growth, revitalization, fiscal responsibility issues. Why not consider this public-private partnership that was started by the large employers in concert with the governments to grow the economy of the Lehigh Valley and to market the region? So that now is, I'm coming up on 7 years in this non-elected political leadership job, which I just love. I love. And the way I can talk about Bethlehem in that transition period in the late 90s into 2000, we can now apply that same verbiage to the Lehigh Valley as a whole, which has just been thrilling because it's really the story of the Lehigh Valley now, all three cities and even the boroughs and the townships and, you know, this just burgeoning, growing economy that's very well balanced, that's phenomenal.
Well, tell me then how going from being the mayor of Bethlehem to Lehigh County executive, that did pull you into all of the tri-county or the all the boroughs, as you said.
Well, you have to, you know, what's great about that, so, you know, I grew up in the city. I mean, you know, an Irish Catholic kid from city neighborhoods, right? When you go and discover Lehigh County, you discover rural farming communities that are Pennsylvania German and are very different. I mean, you know, it's the same county and it's not far away, but culturally you're in a new world, right? Mm-hmm. They're of a different party. They're of a different kind of culture, very different heritage, different thoughts. And being county executive taught me a lot. I mean, it taught me about the diversity of the communities in the Lehigh Valley. You know, it got me working in Allentown. I mean, Allentown's obviously the county seat. And some of the even larger urban issues in downtown Allentown and things around Latino immigration. And then, you know, you go out to Weisenberg Township and Low Hill Township, mm-hmm. and you've got Pennsylvania Dutch farmers and, you know, the McCungies that were once farm that were quickly becoming large residential suburbs, you know. So my experience broadened much more greatly. Just being the mayor wouldn't have been enough to put me in a position to understand what I've needed to understand about a regional economy and the multi. We have 62 different municipalities in the two counties of the Lehigh Valley, and one size does not fit all.
Yeah, isn't it fascinating how the education, your upbringing, the education, all the different jobs you've had led you to where you are now, which we're going to talk about more when mm-hmm. we come back from our next break. But that now you said you love what you do.
Yeah,
now you
it.
Probably could have said you loved what you did in as a mayor as well. I mean, have you always loved
it? I did. You know, I'm really proud. I mean, obviously Betham's my place, right? So, I mean, I'm really proud of what I did as mayor. I love it. It damn near killed me as a young guy at that time, working 80 hours a week and raising a young family. So in a lot of ways, I'm enjoying this more because I'm in my 50s and a little more balance in my life.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that as we come back from this next break. You are listening to Lessons with Leaders, and our guest this evening is Don Cunningham, and we will be back in just a minute.
The many choices and real voices on WDIY are made possible with support from our generous, sustaining members. An automatic monthly gift of $10 on your credit card is an easy way to become a WDIY member and support the programs you love. Set up your monthly sustaining membership gift today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 7 or visit WDIY.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to Lessons with Leaders. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and I have with me this evening Don Cunningham. Welcome back to the show, folks. We are going through the career of Don and learning a little bit about what drives him in all that he does and all those lessons in his leadership roles that we have been hearing about. So, Don, after you were elected for the second time, Lehigh County mm-hmm. Executive, you had left that post, and now you're president and CEO of the Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation, which you alluded to. You said you'd love your job. Mm-hmm. In the search for the position, they selected you for your decision-making skills, leadership and influence, relationship skills, teaming and governance. And I thought that was important because sometimes we think those are a lot of those leadership skills that people think of. How did it feel to step out of that political sphere? You alluded to that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Let's go into that and into this.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I was probably a little nervous when I, you know, again, in the second term as county executive, not being able to run again. And still, you know, being a mid-career guy with kids at that point who were high school and heading into college, what do I do next? And, you know, the logical thing, once you're in politics, everybody assumes, like, that you just want, you're in politics just to be in politics, right? And the offices I ran for were ones that I felt strongly about governing in. You know, I felt strongly about being involved in Betham's government and being the mayor during that time. And being an executive in the county, and but I never had any interest to just run for Congress or run for a legislative position somewhere, state senate. It wasn't that I was looking for a career in politics. I had an interest in those positions. So, about every 2 years, somebody still comes to me about running for Congress. I say, I highly respect it. I regard it. It's just not something I want to do. My interest had become the Lehigh Valley and being in a position where you could influence what I would think to be is the positive change, primarily economically, socially, as a community, quality of life, that this job, because it's a coalition, I always say that LVDC, it sounds like a fancy name, and there's 16 of us over there. We have a great, talented team. But our job is to keep this coalition of the willing together. We're a public-private partnership. We were begun by large employers in the mid-90s who saw the need for the region to act as a region, that we were never going to make progress, Allentown fighting Bethlehem and Bethlehem fighting Easton and Lehigh County fighting Northampton County, but pooling our efforts together to realize we're the third largest region in Pennsylvania. And we have these tremendous assets, but only if we think as much as one as we can and tell our story as one. So that was the whole impetus behind it. And it's dual funded by private companies and by the government through the hotel tax. The people who come to our community and stay in our hotels, we get a little bit of the percentage of that. And it's the aim is to keep as best possible everybody kind of moving the same way, which, you know, when I look back in the early part of my career in leadership being mayor, it was the same thing. It was, you know, not a defined coalition, but any mayor who thinks they're going to order things up because they have the title quickly finds out that's not the way it works, right? You always say, like, you know, your title might be respected, but you're not respected until you earn it, right? And the only way you can earn it is by bringing people together as best as possible around a plan or a vision or goal, and realizing you're not always going to win and that you have to share credit, right? No leader is responsible for all good that's happened, just like they're not responsible for all bad that happens either, right? So things get assigned to you that are bad, and leaders sometimes will want to take credit for all that's good. And the reality is the best you've done is hopefully played a role in moving people towards the right thing. So that's why this job became the perfect job because, you know, we bridge two counties, we bridge three cities, 62 municipalities. We work extensively now with the education community because economic growth is all about talent. It's all about people. It's all about the right skills for the right jobs. I'm on the advisory council of all three vocational technical schools. Work closely with the community colleges and a lot on skills gap and worker training and working with companies and the government. So I never once missed the politics. In fact, every day I'm not involved in what has become an unfortunate political world in the U.S. I'm glad not to be involved in the trenches, but I'm also equally kind of just disappointed by the art of compromise and meeting in the middle and understanding each other is almost gone in the partisan wars now. So therefore, very little can get accomplished. You know, if it would have been that way back when I was running Bethlehem or Lehigh County or when we were involved in the state, well, we couldn't have got anything done. I mean, and so we can't really get much done as a country until people realize that we're all Americans. We all want the same basic things. And you got to have some meeting in the middle.
Well, going back to what you said, it's not the politics. It wasn't the politics for you. Mm-hmm. Yet you were so successful in what you did. And maybe it's because you did keep the politics out of it in such a way that you said the plan was not political. Yeah. The plan was
governmental.
You know, to govern and take care.
You know, I was able to do that at the local level. I did in 08 and 09. I spent about 16 months exploring a run for governor in the 2010 governor's race, which would have been the post-Ed Rendell period that Tom Corbett ended up winning. So I spent about a year and a half raising money and traveling the state and really came face-to-face with learning about once you get outside of your community and your backyard, what really drives politics. And a lot of it's money and a lot of it is partisanship. And I decided it wasn't for me. I decided practically I probably can't win, and coming out of the Lehigh Valley, and secondly, I
too
also,
many fresh ideas.
Yeah, it was
too idealistic.
Yeah, I think I was idealistic, and it was a little distasteful. And I don't say that just because I couldn't break through. I mean, I just decided that, you know, I was going to be at the end of my run with politics. The nice thing is I had somewhere to transition to in leadership where it matters to me. Once again, I think, you know, people aren't always going to agree, nor should they, but the Lehigh Valley is an amazing place because people from all different sectors and even different parties tend to work towards some greater good. Mm-hmm. It's becoming unusual that you see that in the U.S., but we still have it. You know, again, not everybody's always going to agree, and that's democracy. But in general, we all want the same kind of.
Well, it's because Lehigh County, we had been there.
Yeah.
We saw the bottom and saw how progress, you know, helped bring us out of
that. I don't know what all the dynamics are, but it's a special place.
So with the Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation, this partnership, private and mm-hmm. public partnership, mm-hmm. the counties are involved,
counties
businesses
are involved. Businesses.
So if I can ask, and this
education
doesn't
community.
Necessarily go to mm-hmm. your leadership skills, but I'm mm-hmm. just curious, how do businesses benefit from being involved, and
right.
how do they go about becoming involved?
Yeah.
What difference can they make for you?
So the simple thing is it's a very kind of altruistic vision, right? It's the rising tide will float all boats. So it's not if I give you $1,000 towards the cause, we're going to get business out of it or so forth. It's if our economy's growing, if we're developing better skills for our folks, if we're recruiting new companies in, if we're infusing our economy with new, and if we're recruiting the type of companies we want to see. People don't realize the significance of what's happening in the life sciences, biomed tech, even manufacturing. We're the 50th largest manufacturing center in the United States. We have over 700 manufacturers here. It's the second biggest part of our economy. All anybody ever wants to talk about is big box warehouse and fulfillment centers, which are very obvious in front of your eye, but it's a small, small part of our economy. And there's all this great stuff that, you know, banks get work out of and mm-hmm. insurance companies get work out of and cities benefit from because employees and colleges benefit from. So it truly is this,
retail.
It's truly this mission of, if we all put a little bit in this pot and do this work well, we all have a brighter future because of it, right? So, but the reality is we're not like the Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber of Commerce has 6,000 members. You know, they've got just thousands and thousands of small businesses. We basically have about 250 companies that are either the larger employers in the Lehigh Valley or those that are directly involved in some way in the world of economic growth and development, real estate, insurance, banking, finance, so forth and so on. So it's a smaller subset of companies, but basically all the large employers in the Valley contribute some money towards the effort we make.
And are you still having that vision of looking into the future and what are we preparing for so that what you saw when you were 25 doesn't happen again?
And one of the big things is alignment of education, right? The skill set. What's great about the Lehigh Valley is we're putting out 10,000 graduates every spring out of the universities and colleges and community colleges that are here. We have a great educational infrastructure with our 9th through 12th vocational technical schools, our community colleges, our four-year schools. So having a robust economic sector that can train employees is huge. Having the growth of the cultural arts and the amenities in the downtowns is attracting young people. 30% of Bethlehem's population is 18 to 34.
Oh, wow.
Same with Easton.
Wow.
And Allentown's about 28%. To put some perspective to that, the whole state of Pennsylvania, it's only 22%. And the city of Philadelphia is only 29%. We are keeping and attracting young people. A lot of that is because of what's happening in our downtowns. That's another vision that needs to continue to be a growth area. And the ability to have a balanced economy. You know, doing a lot of work, like I mentioned earlier, around advanced manufacturing and life sciences and biotech, along with the industrial sector, which employs a lot of non-skilled or low-skilled folks. We have a very balanced economy, and balance needs to be the story around growth. You know, you want to preserve your way of life. You want to preserve open space, but you want to maximize redeveloping what you can to keep your opportunity there. So I think we're on a really good course with it.
So do you employ anyone who's 25, up and coming, with fresh ideas at Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation?
You know, it's funny, and maybe because
the next Don Cunningham.
There's only one person at LVDC older than me. I work with this hotbed of millennials, you know, which everybody talks about trying to figure out the millennials. And my kids are millennials. My kids are, you know, 31, 29, 27, 23. And most of the people I work with are about that age. And it's amazing. They've got a lot of energy, a lot of vision. In a lot of ways, they're more idealistic even than my generation was, in terms of they want to see things done the right way and the way they envision things. And they do have different ideas, and I'm learning every day from them now. I feel like overnight I went from being this young guy who was the youngest mayor and still the youngest mayor in Bethlehem's history to like the old salt in the office at 53. It happens fast, right? I mean, but you just got to keep learning and changing.
Well, the old salt in the office, I would like to say, you know, maybe from outward appearance, but don't we still inside feel like that young, you know? 20?
That's why I have my hobbies. Yeah. That's why I still play rock and roll, because I feel like I'm, you know, 25.
So where do you play the rock and roll? Like in your basement? Or
No. I've been in bands since junior high, and we have a band called Cunningham and Associates, and 2 weekends ago, we played at the Sands and the Arts Quest.
I didn't know
this. This weekend, we were over in Phillipsburg and Helen. We do about 25 shows a year, 60s, 70s, 80s cover, rock and roll, and play all around the Lehigh Valley.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
So that's that I have more time for now than I used to when I was in public life. And it fits better now when I'm, you know, I'm not going to be the mayor and then going to pick up my guitar. You know?
So tell me about your family through your wife and your children. Mm-hmm. So through all of this, they've been with you through the different political positions and now what you're doing.
Yeah.
The support they've given you to allow you to do what you've done.
Yeah, and you know, it's two wives in the course of it. Both, I'm lucky because I've had two great wives. I mean, my former wife, Laura, still lives here in Bethlehem. I see her, you know, all the time. And then Lynn, who many people know, my current wife, Lynn, who's just a wonderful, energetic lady who ran the Bethlehem Chamber of Commerce for 14 years, just stepped aside from that job. And she's kind of lived and breathed Bethlehem all her life. She's born and raised here. My kids, you know, they grew up very little with their dad, like in public office. And, you know, talking to them, I'm very close with them and talking to them about that experience now after it's gone. You know, it created some challenges for them. It probably opened some doors, but it also, I didn't realize it at the time, but kind of put them under the thumb in terms of, you know, people knowing who they were and expecting different things out of them. But I'm so proud. None of them are in politics, and I hope they remain out of it. But my daughter teaches in a disadvantaged neighborhood in North Philadelphia, the first graders, and my youngest son is a home goods designer for Ralph Lauren in New York.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Lighting fixtures and tables. And then my oldest son works here at Cigars International in the media communications in the corporate office.
Took a little bit of that from you?
He's very much along my path in terms of he's a writer. But now it's all electronics and internet and different forms of communication. But still at its core, writing. He's a very good writer. They've all done well.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So when you kind of lay everything out that we've just talked about, what do you feel really drives you? Is it trying to accomplish something? Are you trying to always be a success story? Does it matter what you're working on? Do you always have that? What kind of motivates you?
Yeah, I mean,
you?
For better or worse, I'm always looking at the next project, the next thing we can get done. Right. So if I had to say what drives me, it is how can we improve it? If anything, I focus too often on, as soon as something happens, I'm focused on what's not going right and what needs to be fixed and how can we be more competitive with Nashville or Columbus or Raleigh, Durham or Pittsburgh, and, you know, we're as good as them. We should be as well recognized as them. Companies should be coming here, not there. And, you know, what can we do? And every job I've been in, it's always been that. And I'm very, it has to be about results. You know, I hate process. You know, I mean, I like process, but good process that works towards an ends. And maybe a little bit of impatience I've always had in terms of, you know, I think some of that comes from politics is you get a term, you get 4 years. And you have to show progress by year three or you don't get another four. Also, I think growing up young and having a parent die, it's like the clock's ticking from the day you're born. The clock's ticking, you know. So there's always been an impatience to just kind of keep moving and keep showing progress. And I love working in the community sphere, you know. I've worked for companies, I've worked for institutions, and it's just more rewarding when you can drive down Broad Street and say, hey, I think that restaurant and those offices are there a little bit because of what we did at the time. You know, it makes you feel good.
I would think it would almost be a little bit overwhelming that you could kind of get overcome.
Someday
by it
will be, maybe when I'm done and retired.
But I mean, yeah. You know, emotionally overwhelming, yeah. Like the impact that you actually can see that impact,
yeah,
on a daily basis.
It's cool. It's like, you know, it must be somebody who works in the construction trades. You know, at the end of the day, you go home, it's like, hey, I built that building.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
it's pretty cool. And you can point out to your kids, yeah, I put the bricks on that building or I wired the electric in there. And it's a very tangible thing. And that's what kind of drives me, is that tangible. And we did Coca-Cola Park. That was really cool.
Phenomenal.
County, you know.
Love that.
The stuff we did on the Bethlehem Steel land to lay the groundwork for all of those new things to spring up, or the downtown. So, yeah, I mean, I've been lucky because I've been able to align what I like to do and my passion with jobs that fit.
Well, thank you for all that you've done for the Lehigh County and for Bethlehem, and being a leader here and continuing to be a leader in our community and drive it. So thank you so much for sharing your story and all.
Thanks for asking. I've done many interviews, but longest I've talked about just my career.
Well, it's been wonderful, and we really appreciate all your lessons that you've shared. Sharing credit being very important, and results oriented, and always looking to continue to improve. So thank you so much. We have been speaking with Don Cunningham, President and CEO of the Lehigh Valley Economic Corporation. And we want to thank him for his willingness to share his lessons on leadership. Our best to him and all his endeavors as president and CEO. And beyond that, thank you to Neil Heaver, our producer, and especially to our listeners. Be your best with purpose and passion, and you will be a leader. Have a lovely tomorrow.